watching human movement and stuff, is just appreciating the individual variation and not being as strict about every little thing.
When's the last time you actually thought about your life insurance and if it's the right one for you? Hello, world. Uncharted Performance is sponsored by HealthIQ, a life insurance company that helps athletes and coaches like us, CrossFitters, weightlifters, endurance athletes, and strongman competitors, to name a few, get lower rates on their life insurance. They use actual science and data and not the outdated BMI, for example, to secure lower rates on life insurance for us. 56% of HealthIQ customers have saved between 40 to 33% on their life insurance. And who doesn't like a little extra cash and a greater peace of mind? And on top of that, HealthIQ is also the official life insurance partner of USA Weightlifting. Does a typical life insurer consider that you're doing the CrossFit Open, running triathlons, snatching 275 pounds, or just taking the simple steps to get healthier and fitter by the day? Unfortunately, they don't consider the fact that you train and lift weights and you are actually getting healthier and you will live longer. To work with someone that does and to support the show and see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/uncharted or mention the promo code uncharted when you talk to a HealthIQ agent. What is going on, fam? It is a beautiful day today here in sunny Cleveland, Ohio. Can say that a lot. And I hope that the early days of spring are bringing you beautiful weather as well. Before we get into episode 89, I can't believe it's 89 and 90 right around the corner. We have another incredible profiles in Uncharted story for you. This one hits close to home. And I was actually pretty moved when I received the story about Tom Lazzaro, written by his partner, Christine Ahrens. The reason is I've shared my struggles with alcohol and substance abuse in the past, and Tom has a similar path. So it's an honor for me to be able to have this medium and share not only his, but also our past profiles on the last couple of episodes. If you missed those of Dennis Ward and Megan Kay, please check those out. And this segment is brought to you by and sponsored by the amazing, incredible folks at SeekingAzot.com that have developed the awesome Azot 2.0, which is a beautiful supplement that will boost your productivity, mood, and energy to new heights. If you find yourself tired, crashing, and you are getting the right amount of sleep and eating, and you just kind of can't figure it out, this could be the magic pill that you are looking for without being an actual magic pill. I've mentioned this in the past. This is sort of like Bradley Cooper's magic drug in Limitless, but legal and obviously incredible in what it does without any side effects, any jitters, or anything that you might come across with caffeine pills. It is not caffeinated, but it does do an amazing job of addressing focus and energy and productivity. It basically reduces cortisol, increases blood flow and oxygen to the brain, increases energy without the jitters, as I mentioned, and optimizes senses of well-being and mood. If you want to, guys, check this out. It's something that I've been using, especially with all the things that I'm doing at once. It helps me provide me with clarity, focus, and that energy that I'm often looking for to run the multiple podcasts that I have and other projects that I'm working on. So again, SeekingAzot.com. You guys get 10% off if you use the code Uncharted at checkout. So without further ado, this beautiful story was written by Christine Ahrens about Tom Lazzaro. This year on April 14th, Tom will recognize 12 years of uninterrupted sobriety. His journey choosing this path did not happen with a flip of the switch. Throughout high school and into his 20s, Tom partied quote-unquote often, experimenting with drugs and alcohol. There were periods of self-recognition of his behaviors. However, the idea of sobriety was not something he considered until his late 20s, when the consequences of his actions became more severe. During his adolescence, Tom self-recognized tendencies of an addictive personality, having witnessed his family struggle with addiction during his youth. In high school, Tom put extreme efforts into any endeavor he pursued, from his activities in sports, the weight room, to working extra hours to help support himself. And two sons he fathered at a young age, all while trying to meet academic requirements. Into his mid-20s, partying took priority over all responsibilities, leading him down a dark path, which only sobriety would help turn around. Tom's first attempt at sobriety was in 2004, and then on April 14th, 2006, one final consequence pushed him back to the rooms of AA. Fitness was not initially a focus at the beginning of his sobriety. After a few years in the program, it was time for another life change, and fitness became a primary focus. A slow start of running, hitting the weight room at the Logo YMCA, and attending some group classes led to a more consistent workout regime, and then eventually joining his first CrossFit gym in October 2010. He dove headfirst into CrossFit, getting his CrossFit Level 1 certification, CrossFit Level 2 cert, USA Weightlifting Coach Performance Certification, and the GORUCK community. Tom's mindset towards sobriety transcends into his daily life, from his workout habits, CrossFit, and relationships with family and friends. He believes the principles he learned from AA and his journey are a continued work in progress, but one that is full of opportunity to be a better version of himself every day. Of note, I asked him how comfortable he was sharing so much of his personal life to the potential audience and listeners. His reply: sure, who knows? There might be one or two people that hear that are struggling, and they will like to talk to me or somewhere else. That right there sums up Tom's genuine and caring personality. It's what makes him such a special person in my eyes. So again, a massive thank you to Christine and Tom. I know that it's often difficult to share, speaking from experience, dealing and kind of coming to grips the problems that we might have had or that we're going through, and sharing those with individuals outside of even your close ones or outside of your inner circle. So Christine and Tom, thank you very much. And again, a massive thank you to the AZOT team for being a sponsor of this growing and incredible segment. Again, use the code UNCHARTED, all caps, for 10% off at seekingazot.com. For episode 89, our guest is the immensely popular and outgoing Dr. Teddy Woolsey of Strength Coach Therapy and Healthy Baller. Many of you might be familiar with Teddy from his Instagram account and other social media, on which he shares very valuable and awesome content that we can apply in our training, prehab, warm-ups, active recovery, and coming off injury. We discuss his growth in popularity and following, how it happened, the benefits it provides, along with the downside of having such a large following. We nail down what sets Teddy apart from others in his field, his philosophy, how he's bridging the gap between strength and conditioning and physical therapy, and how he has evolved as a professional. We also dive into practices that set Teddy off a bit, movements and exercises we would benefit from incorporating more often into our training, the purpose of active recovery and what it should look like, his passion for the outdoors, and surviving the sometimes unsurvivable DC metro traffic. We are very honored to feature Teddy as a guest on the show, one which was very entertaining and insightful for myself, and very excited for his, again, very bright future. Make sure you don't just listen, but digest, apply, and take note of the items and topics we discuss, which all can also be found down in the show notes on unchartedperformance.com. And as always, if you find the information valuable and or the conversation entertaining, please share and consider taking a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes. And with that, enjoy and talk to you soon, fam. Teddy, welcome to Uncharted Performance. Thank you for taking the time.
Hey, pal. Thanks for having me, man. It's a pleasure to be on here.
Pleasure to have you, man. Thank you for taking the time. First thing I want to start off with is, I know you are out in the DC metro area.
Yeah.
And I've had the pleasure and the misfortune of going to college there. I went to the American University.
AU. There you go,
man. Yeah, that's what's up. And I also spent a year there after college working downtown DC. And okay. I do not miss the traffic.
I have a crosstown commute, so it's not too bad. I don't really have to go in or out, and that's where the nasty traffic is, man.
Okay.
But yeah, it's not too bad for me.
Okay, I was gonna say, how do you take it? Because the gym that you work at, Healthy Bowler, is out in Rockville, correct?
Yeah. So where it's in Rockville, but it's right on the edge there, and I live in Silver Spring, and so
Oh, okay. Yeah. So
it's really not too far.
no,
Yeah,
not at all.
it's about 20, 25 minutes. But I tell you, man, everybody that lives here plans, you plan everything around the traffic and my appointments and time of day, and it really does run a lot of your life.
How did you end up in the DC area?
I grew up here,
Okay.
so and my wife's from here as well, and so I'm a little more open to exploring new places, but my lovely wife wanted to stay in this area, so this is where we are. And
Awesome.
we have a lot of good friends and family here, so it could be a lot worse.
Okay, very cool. One of the things
Yeah,
I
man.
noticed when I was doing the research for our conversation was that you enjoy the outdoors.
Nice, man. Yeah, that's
I
a good little find. It's a good
yeah,
find.
and I do so as well. I actually didn't find that till more recently. Not when I was in DC, but any good spots for hiking and just doing outdoorsy things in the DC metro area?
Well, so you got to get out of the city. I mean, did you ever, when you lived here, did you ever check out like the areas by the Potomac River, like Great Falls or stuff like that?
No, I did not.
Oh man, it's gorgeous.
Okay.
Yeah, so the Potomac River's, there's a lot of good spots, and DC is actually like a hub for the U.S. kayaking team.
Yeah, down in Georgetown, right? Okay.
Yeah, well, so if you go north up the river a little bit, there's some serious falls. And rapids, and so there's one of my buddies from high school actually was an Olympic kayaker, and there's this whole kind of like outdoorsy scene within the city of people that do rock climbing and stuff like that all around that Potomac River area. But
Okay.
man, I've done some awesome trips in like West Virginia and just getting out a couple hours from the city. And yeah, I did a backpacking. My brother and I last fall did a backpacking camping trip. We hiked 22 miles in 2 days, and it was kind of gnarly, but it was gorgeous views just out in the middle of nowhere. So
Was that the
that's
coolest trip you've ever done?
the my coolest trip was, so my wife and I, when we got engaged, we drove across the, right after we both finished grad school at the same time, and we drove across the country. We drove over 10,000 miles in 6 weeks, and I actually have the route that we drove tattooed on my arm.
Oh, wow.
And we went to 13 different national parks and camped in like six or seven of them. So basically, we would camp for 2 or 3 nights, go stay in a hotel, wash up a little bit, and go camp again. And she was a good sport.
That is awesome. We just
Yeah.
we actually came back from Arizona
Oh, nice.
a couple days ago, and we finally got the annual pass for
Yeah.
the national park. So
Yeah, that's what we did that year.
yeah, that's a game changer for anybody that's listening. You can save quite a lot of money if you get the annual pass for the national parks.
For sure.
But speaking of our trip, and a way you helped me that you probably don't know about, was that, are you familiar with the CrossFit Open at all? Yes. So it's obviously the season right now, and I did the last workout on a Friday in Flagstaff, and then we went down to Sedona to do some hiking. And on the way back, just out of nowhere, my low back just got seized up on me. Nothing that's it hasn't happened before. It came kind of out of nowhere and just locked up on me. It was just really tight. And I think that same day, or maybe the day before, you posted on social media the low back hip mobility video, and I was like, perfect timing. I need this right now. And that really helped me kind of loosen up, obviously, the glutes and the low back, but kind of alleviate that tightness and that pain that I had for those couple of days. So thank you.
Yeah,
You
of
probably didn't
course.
know it, but you definitely helped me out.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, and so kind of getting into social media, and I don't want to spend necessarily too much time on it, but you have a massive presence for a physical therapist, quote unquote, right?
Exactly.
On
I
Instagram.
don't like to put myself in too many categories. That's why I confuse people by posting strength and conditioning stuff and plyometrics and sports performance and then little pain science and low back pain and mixed in there and try to change it up, man.
Okay, so let's actually go with that. So if we're on a plane and we're heading to, you know, Mount Rainier to do some hiking, and I ask, hey, Teddy, what do you do for a living? How do you respond to that?
Well, you know, for years I was a strength conditioning coach. And so that was my response from about age 22 to 26 or so. And then I was in physical therapy school. And then for about a year and a half, I would have said, I'm a physical therapist. But now I still say I'm a physical therapist, but I try to explain to people that I do some other things outside of just physical therapy. So I might say, you know, I'm a physical therapist, but I do a lot of content and continuing education and social media work.
Okay.
And, you know, because it's funny, I heard somebody refer to continuing education as postgraduate education. And I was like, you know, that sounds smart. I should say that.
But, very cool.
But yeah, I'm just trying to, you know, spread knowledge a little bit and kind of help strength coaches see more of the PT side of things and help PTs see a little more of the actual exercise and movement side of things and you know, kind of bridge that gap, I guess.
Got it. And that's a beautiful thing. And actually, when I told a couple of my colleagues that I work with at Black Flag Athletics that you were coming on, and like, oh, you got Teddy coming on. We, you know, we follow him on Instagram.
That's cool.
And so I obviously got I got a good response from everybody.
nice.
But kind of going back to that, how did you grow so massive?
Oh man, I don't even freaking know, dude. I don't even know. It just, like, it was not my intention. When I first started my social media, I was thinking, you know, okay, I've been reading T Nation and following guys like Cressy and Dean Somerset and Brett Contreras and like following guys like this for over 10 years. And I was like, you know, I want to start kind of adding to the noise a little bit and get enough followers or build a resume, so to speak, that I would be able to reach out to those people. And so then I just started posting and it just took off. And, you know, I think I was in the right time, in the right place, in the right time in terms of Instagram and kind of those little things of the platform growing. You know, Instagram's kind of like the most popular social media right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not even sure if it was 2 years ago. I think Facebook was probably had that. So I think there were a few different factors that played into that. And I was fortunate in that I was able to get my voice heard, because there's a lot of really smart people doing great things that mm-hmm. don't catch on with the same followership. So yeah, I'm just kind of lucky, but it's given me tremendous opportunities and allowed me to you know, kind of meet with people and network with people that I might not have been able to otherwise. So
okay, so through your growth, you were able to connect with the Cressys and the Contreras's and whatnot that you were kind of looking up to while coming up.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. I was able to connect with some of those guys and meet a lot of new people. And, you know, it's also given me the opportunity to teach some seminars that I have coming up. And, you know, even I don't think that it directly led to this, but I had an opportunity to write an article to submit to a peer-reviewed, you know, publication for the NSCA. And so,
like, congratulations, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks. And so I got that back from the peer reviewers, and hopefully it should be coming out here pretty soon. And so... yeah, it's opened up a lot of doors.
Awesome. Congratulations again.
Appreciate it.
You got it. If you, let's take the Instagram away, and let's say you have maybe one follower instead of the 299,000. And what sets...
So let's say my mom's the only one following me. And she's like, that's great, honey.
Perfect. great example. What sets you apart besides the dynamic of being, you know, having the strength and conditioning background and trying to bridge the gap between physical therapy and strength and conditioning. What are some of the other things that you think make you maybe unique or set you apart from the rest of, you know, quote unquote physical therapists or strength coaches?
I would say my passion for the field.
Okay.
You know, it's whether it's the thousands and thousands of squats and deadlifts I've done in my life, or the kind of the wide range of experiences from neurological rehab to, you know, NFL strength conditioning or anywhere in between. Like, I think that my passion for like all things rehab and kind of the human body is what sets me apart. And then within that, I'm able to kind of synthesize those thoughts and combine them and use principles that maybe I learned in one setting and apply them to other settings, you know? And so I think that's what sets me apart.
Okay.
And you actually go for it.
No, you actually, I had the pleasure of talking to another coach who actually brought up the same thing that you just did in terms of learning things. Actually, several past guests and friends of the show and myself that have mentioned that they've picked up things from other fields and been able to apply them to, be it Olympic weightlifting or CrossFit, just the two examples I can think of. Can you cite something specifically that's kind of in your experience, your space?
All right, so here's an example. I have a patient right now who's 5 weeks post ACL surgery. Uh-huh. And she had a kind of a bad injury with the LCL and a lateral meniscus and some joint capsule tearing as well. And so she was in an immobilizer brace for 4 weeks, which means that her legs just locked, mm-hmm. locked in full extension. So she's way behind for where we would expect her to be for an ACL rehab in 4 to 5 weeks. Her quad is barely firing. One thing that I've stuck with is now that she's out of that brace, I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to sit there on a table like most physical therapists might do and work on manual feedback and short arc or little, you know, leg extensions. There's nothing wrong with leg extensions, but I'm not going to sit there and do that. I'm going to get her on her feet because I know that neurologically that's the way our bodies work. So an example would be in stroke or neuro rehab, oftentimes, let's say somebody has a stroke and their left side's their hemiplegic or affected side, they're not going to be able to sit there and voluntarily fire any of their left leg muscles. But if you get in, it'll just feel like mashed potatoes. But if you get them standing up and actually on their leg and they get that grounding effect and that proprioceptive feedback of their leg being on the ground, their muscles start to fire. And so I can take that example and I can picture the people that I worked with right now when I was in physical therapy school that I saw that principle come to life. And I can take that and apply it to an orthopedic rehab scenario. And, you know, that's something that if I hadn't had that neuro rehab, I might not have appreciated the effect or the power of putting your foot on the ground and the way that affects your nervous system from the bottom up. And so, you know, in all these different rehab scenarios, I'm kind of pulling from past experiences, and oftentimes they are not the ones that, you know, you might think are as helpful. Like a lot of times physical therapists that want to do sports med, they'll sit there in these neuro rehabs working with people with strokes and they'll be like, man, this is what I went to PT school for. But if you kind of slow down, you can learn a lot of stuff from those situations. So that's my example.
Awesome. And thank you for sharing
that. Yeah.
Because I
think of course.
Oftentimes I think we get the blinders put on and kind of see things only the way we want to see them and not take out outside opinion or even past experience and apply it to what we're doing now. Mm-hmm. Just to close the loop on the social media real quick, just to go back to that, you mentioned some of the pros that that come with the growth. What are some of the cons of having such a large following?
That's a really good question. I don't think anybody's asked me that. My wife certainly knows the cons, but I don't know how many people outside of her and my close friends. You know, the hardest thing for me is I'm naturally an extroverted person. I am a people pleaser, and I hate saying no to people, and I do it all the time now. I've said no to more people in the past 6 months than I ever have in my life. And it's whether it's a perfectly friendly guy that just wants to network and talk shop, or it's somebody that wants help with their knee pain that it's just not a reasonable request because it's a DM, mm-hmm. you know, and everything in between. I just have to say no to people all the time. I've kind of become this person that other people are like reaching out to, and they want, and you know, people want to kind of talk to me or quote unquote pick my brain. And you know, pal, I just don't have time for everybody to pick my brain. And it's, that's been the most difficult thing for me, is just saying no to people. And it's I have to learn to be, and I'm getting better at it, but I've needed to learn to be a little more selfish with my time, because I'm so damn busy and I have a lot of different projects going on. And the reality is that every 30 minutes that I spend with somebody picking my brain is 30 less minutes that I can talk to my wife at night and when I'm home.
Got it.
You know? And so that's the most challenging thing for me.
So let's wrap it up right now.
No, it's all good, dude. That was not anything personal, but I think a lot of people in my situation would can appreciate that.
Yeah. What are some of the things that you're doing to get better at it? Because I think a lot of, maybe you could, somebody could take away who's in a similar situation, as again, very little time on their hands. How do you get better at saying no? Do you just do more of it?
Yeah. Yeah, you do more of it. And, you know, you try to, you have to be okay with the fact that you're not going to please everybody. And it's, I really don't like it. It's totally against kind of my nature. And I think one of the reasons that maybe my social media is something that people enjoy following along is that I am kind of a lighthearted person, and I do like to joke around and be goofy and, you know, answer people's questions and be available and all that stuff. But yeah, you just get a little more used to, being slightly guarded with your time, because, especially once you see the negative repercussions of it, when you're not getting done what you want to get done. Like, there's a reason I don't have a formal website up yet. And it's, you know, it's not because I'm lazy. It's, it's because I just haven't had the like hours and hours that I need to create the content for it, because I'm putting content elsewhere. So,
got it.
You know, yeah, man.
But the homepage looks good. I mean, nice picture and a bio. It's a start.
Yeah, no, it's, that was just that's the very initial part of a project that I'm doing to create some different things that, hopefully I can, you know, offer something beyond the little snippets that I do on Instagram and give people some more like tangible rehab guides and things that they can use and, okay. And get slightly reimbursed for the time investment of it as well.
Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah.
Speaking of projects, I believe one of the projects that you were involved in or are involved in is the Awaken Training Series. That came out, that Marcus Philly put out. Again, friend of the show, awesome guest, obviously awesome athlete and person.
Yeah.
And just totally great guy.
Marcus is a good dude.
How did you guys meet? How did you guys hook up?
You know, we connected on social media.
Okay.
I've connected with a lot of people on just purely through social. And Marcus actually reached out to me initially. You know, I'm not, my kind of strength and conditioning background is more from the powerlifting and like sports performance side of things. So I'm not as plugged into the CrossFit world. So I actually did not, wasn't familiar with Marcus, but the first time he reached out to me was, he just had a question for me about a client, and I responded to it, and he was like, man, like that was really cool of you to help me out. And I, you know, I don't know if you ever follow like the DMs that I post on my stories, but like I'm fairly responsive with people. And then after that, Marcus and I, we were like, hey, let's have a chat. And we spoke for, you know, we ended up speaking for like an hour. And he was like, you know, I'm thinking about doing this recovery series thing within my Awaken Training. And would you be interested in doing some videos? And I said, yeah. And, you know, it was, the experience with Marcus in the Awaken Training was kind of an intro for me in terms of like longer format content.
Okay.
And so, you know, I felt like it was a little rusty at first. I didn't put out the product that I was super proud of, but you know, everybody's their own worst critic. And over time, I feel like I've, you know, done a little bit better work, and like that meathead yoga video that you saw, and just kind of putting together some recovery workouts for Marcus to put in his awakened training series and introduce some new movements and mobility and stretching for people.
And what kind of came out of that is, and it helped me a lot too, is because as a coach and athlete, you know, active recovery is important, but sometimes without structure, do you actually do it or do you follow through with it if you have, you know, if you're short on time or if it's not programmed or scheduled in for you? So I actually want to spend a few minutes on that, if you don't mind, and kind of talk about that, because, you know, being able to follow the Awaken Training Series and then also the recovery days with your content, it gives me that structure and kind of forces me, again, this might sound blasphemous to some, but I don't always, you know, focus on active recovery as much as I should, but this has forced me to do that. And it's very structured and very detailed in terms of the actual movements that you do, not like roll for 500 and take a chill, right?
Right.
From your experience and your knowledge, can you just emphasize the importance of active recovery to, you know, not only for the those seeking, you know, health and wellness, but also for the performance athletes?
You know, there's a few different aspects to active recovery, and you know, one of them is your orthopedic health. And so you could think in terms of, you know, taking your spine and your hips and your shoulders through a full range of motion and some stretching and in ranges that they might not have seen during your normal training week. Mm-hmm. So there's the orthopedic health aspect of it. And I think that one of the biggest aspects of it is also just the mental part of it. And I really enjoy active recovery because it's a change of pace, and it's not the same intensity of training that I would do normally. And so, you know, your central nervous system can kind of recover a little bit. You can come back feeling stronger the next day instead of kind of fatigued or sluggish. And, you know, there's in some of my different active recovery stuff, I like to put in breathing or relaxation mm-hmm. type of things, like holding stretches for longer periods of time. And, you know, kind of it's inspired a little bit by some different principles that you see in yoga and Pilates. And I think that for a lot of people, they would benefit from just taking some time to go through that work, because, you know, the typical athlete that's doing something like the Awaken Training Series is a pretty highly trained athlete, and they're pushing their body to extremes, and they need to kind of balance that out.
Do you like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver? Well, guess what? Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a healthy, conscious lifestyle. People who train, work out, and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. It's that simple. The training we already do can save us 25% on our life insurance. That's because people like us who exercise have 56% lower risk of heart disease, 34% lower risk of all-cause mortality, and 22% lower risk of cancer. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ, and to learn more and get a free quote, head over to healthiq.com/uncharted. Okay, awesome. What should it look like to provide a little bit more detail? Again, because active recovery, because mm-hmm. this is a, you know, a 3,000 meter row on a Sunday at low intensity, not pushing it very hard. Is that adequate active recovery?
I don't think it is.
Okay.
Just because it's in one range of motion, mm-hmm. and it's not really, it's active recovery in the fact that you have, that you're at a submaximal heart rate, mm-hmm. you know, and you're staying aerobic. Like one thing for active recovery is you want to stay in the aerobic zone. You don't want to push anywhere close to your lactate threshold. And what that means is you want your heart rate to kind of be steady. And if you're, let's say you're a 30 years old and your heart rate, your max heart rate, just, you know, carbonin formula 220 minus your age. If your max heart rate is 190, you want to be somewhere in the 120s for your active recovery day. And, I think that rowing could get you above that. And I also think that, that same repetitive motion doesn't really embody what we want from active recovery. You know, you're not getting hip rotation. You're just getting deep hip flexion. You're not really getting shoulder rotation. You're just getting a row motion over and over again that you've already been doing all week. So there's nothing wrong with an erg being part of an active recovery circuit for the cardio piece. But I don't think that simply rowing on its own would be defined as active recovery. Now, you could say that walking might be active recovery, and maybe that's because you're walking on a day that you're sore as hell and you don't want to go do anything else. And that's cool. I mean, sometimes you have to listen to your body. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to go outside and get some vitamin D, and, you know, like we were talking about earlier, you and I both really appreciate the power that nature has. And, you know, more and more we kind of look for ways to unplug and get away from these phones. And if that's your active recovery, like just not being connected for a little bit, then maybe that's helpful. I mean, so I think that there's a mental component to it and also the physical.
Beautiful. So we're going to take a left turn. Because I want to, again, pick up on something that you mentioned earlier, and that's powerlifting. Mm-hmm. What drew you to the sport?
Oh, man. You know, I naturally kind of excelled at it, and I think people like to do things that they're good at.
Okay.
You know, I had shoulder surgery when I was 18 years old, and that was after multiple dislocations, and I quickly knew that I was never going to be a great snatcher. And just because I couldn't catch anything over 135 over my head. I mean, it just, I was scared to hell of it. Oh. And I ended up hurting my shoulder doing it one time. And, so for me, I really enjoyed the rush of lifting heavy weights, and I'm kind of a naturally more of a fast twitch fiber type of composition. Whereas let's say you compare bodybuilding versus powerlifting, I'm naturally, genetically, I'm much more inclined towards powerlifting. And I learned under a strength coach who was good friends with Louis Simmons, mm-hmm. you know, West Side Barbell, mm-hmm. and you should know that being in Ohio, and and so I was introduced to powerlifting principles and kind of the West Side method and the conjugate method and you know the whole concept of dynamic repeated max effort stuff, and I just loved it. It was my first real introduction to training theory, mm-hmm. and I just, you know, I kind of took it and ran, and then I happened to meet other people in my life that were, or make friends with other people that were into powerlifting, and it just kind of took off.
Are you still?
And it's fun.
Are you still actively pursuing that?
No, I don't think so. I don't think I'm going to compete again. I have kind of some other fitness priorities in terms of staying healthy and being well balanced, and I'm not sure if I would ever break my former total, and so I'm not sure if it's worth it.
Were you a strength and conditioning coach, or did you shift more towards the kind of the rehab PT side of things while you were still competing?
I was absolutely a strength coach.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I could have, I think I was one of those strength coaches that maybe would help people with shoulder pain sometimes or that sort of thing. But I was a performance coach for all intents and purposes.
Got it. So looking back at it now, as given your experience since then, what are some of the things that you're like, let me rephrase that. Are there any things that you would look back on, reflect on as, again, maybe athlete and coach now, like and say, what the fuck was I doing at that point? It could be. And they, go ahead.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of wish that I had like reached out to people and started the social media thing like earlier.
Okay.
A little bit earlier. But I don't know if I would have been in a good position to excel the way I have now. You know, like I get a lot of 25-year-olds that ask me about, I'm just saying 25, and I'm assuming they're sub 30, you know, people that are asking me about like, how do I grow my social? I'm like, first worry about growing what you're actually doing. Mm-hmm. You know, like I didn't post anything trying to tell people how to do this stuff until I was 10 years into my career. But I don't know. I think that I was fortunate in that I had a really good mentor early on, Buddy Morris. Mm-hmm. He's strength and conditioning coach for the Cardinals and Arizona Cardinals. And he was at Pitt when I was finishing my undergrad. And so I spent 4 months every day with him. And I think I was fortunate in that I had a really good mentor and I kind of had a good understanding of how to train people. And, you know, like a lot of young strength coaches do, I had a good appreciation for not overtraining and just running people into the ground.
Got it.
And actually developing power and, you know, paying attention to energy systems and not just being a high intensity trainer, like that sort of crap.
Got it. So,
lesson
to anybody listening, get a mentor.
Yeah, exactly.
or a couple or uh-huh. a few. Yeah.
And if it weren't for him, I probably would have just gone straight to physical therapy school. I probably would have just tried to go right after undergrad, but I fell in love with strength and conditioning and spent 4 years trying to decide what I wanted to do.
Okay. Awesome. So actually that leads me to my next question. How have you evolved in your practice and training since you kind of got into the field?
Well, so I think the biggest evolution is, and maybe I did this when I was younger to kind of answer your last question too, about like, oh man, like what the fuck was I doing? But I think the biggest evolution is for me in terms of like, teaching form and watching human movement and stuff is just appreciating the individual variation and not being as strict about every little thing. You know, a lot of times young coaches they'll message me and be like, you know, but this person's doing that. Or what about that knee valgus? And I'm like, have you ever watched a basketball game? Or like, have you ever actually been in a weight room and seen like tons of high level athletes move around because they don't look perfect, quote unquote, mm-hmm. you know? And so I think the biggest thing for me is appreciating that, not everything's going to be perfect. And that's the human body. And that's just kind of the way things go. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to settle for mediocrity or teach bad, you know, or allow guys to max out on their back squat with bad form or anything like that. It just means that I'm not going to sit there and nitpick every single rep that they do. And so, you know, that kind of goes with like my understanding of pain too, and like the complexity behind that. And, you know, realizing that just that sometimes people try to equate form to pain and like, oh, well your glutes aren't active enough and that's why your knee's going in and then that's why your knee hurts. And it's like, maybe it's totally different. And so, you know, it's kind of like appreciating the complexity and not drawing lines in the sand. And that's the biggest thing that I think as you go along, as you go further, get further into your career, you realize how little we actually know. That's my biggest understanding and kind of what I've taken away over the past few years.
That's awesome. And there are those people, especially on social media, and I wanted to kind of leave that alone, but some of the posts that I read that on your that I read on some of your posts, you know, tend to be mm-hmm. trollish, you know, and close-minded in a way, kind of opposite of what you're just speaking to. How do you deal with that?
You know, so I posted a video the other week of a guy I'm working with. He's 10 months post patellar tendon surgery, mm-hmm. and he's a high level Division I point guard. And I get people commenting like, well, what about his knee valgus? What about this? And it's like, you know, I talked to him the next day. I'm like, Trey, don't read that shit. And he was like, yeah, I know, man. It's just social media. But no, that stuff kind of annoys me. But at the same time, I mean, I didn't sit there and delete it. And it's just young people that don't understand. Again, it's young people that don't understand how the tremendous variation in movement, and they also don't have any context. You know, the longer you're in this field, the more you can appreciate there's different contexts of things. And so people are looking at me, they're like, why are you letting him do that? I'm like, he's 10 months post rehab and he's just not going to jump. You know, like so it gets to a point where, you can't correct every little form thing. You realize that some form breaks down with maximal intent, mm-hmm. I really don't get too much trolling and too much negativity. Mm-hmm. And I think that most of those comments are from people that just don't know any better.
Got it.
I don't think that it's, malicious, mm-hmm. you know, and every once in a while I'll delete a comment, but that's not even once a month. It's very rare.
Okay.
It's very rare that I have to.
Yeah. But let's kind of pull on that thread and just kind of from your experience, some of the stuff that you've seen, in terms of maybe just say athletes or maybe even others in your profession that prescribe athletes to do, but some movements or exercises that kind of make you cringe when you see them done, or maybe the purpose is well, and you know, well intended, but it's not working out.
Well, so this is the one that let me start by saying I've actually learned to accept more training styles than maybe I did 5 or 8 years ago.
Okay.
And that's because the cool thing about exercise is it all works to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. You know, there's actually much more similarity across different training methods, I would say, than there is differences. So like, you know, how did Penn State run this strength conditioning program for 20 years where they did high intensity training? Are you familiar with the old Penn State training?
I am not.
Okay. So they used to run high intensity interval training where athletes would go, their entire weight room was full of like hammer strength plate loaded machines. Uh-huh. And the athletes would go from one machine to the next, and they would do like a triple mechanical drop set on each machine until they couldn't do a hammer strength plate loaded chest press with 25 pounds. And then they go to the next machine, and they would go through this entire circuit. And the weight room had trash cans positioned all the way throughout the weight room because so many people would puke from these mechanical drop sets. Yet, all these Penn State athletes are still out there going to the NFL. And so these guys are actually, despite all the crappy training, they're still making it to the NFL. And so I've come to appreciate that, you know, sometimes we're almost just looking for things to keep us up at night when we get fired up about different training. That being said, the whole concept of foot speed and having completely healthy athletes waste their time by tapping their little toes in and out of ladders all day drives me nuts. You know, if you want to put it into a GPP category and just say that we're getting their heart rates up and we're preparing their ankles for the orthopedic demands of their sport and, you know, something like that, then sure, you can justify it that way. But if you want to say we're making these athletes faster, that's completely, you know, that's bullshit. The way that you make people faster is by training for power and for speed. And the reality is that the SPP or the special preparation that these guys get is through their sport itself. And so here's a perfect example. Like when Buddy Morris would have his guys on tempo days, he did a very like a high-low training manual, kind of like a high-low approach to speed, kind of like a Charlie Francis derivative where you're either above 90% intent or effort, or you're below I kind of like to say intent instead of effort because I don't think people can always deliver their maximal effort. I think that depends on their preparation, but they can always deliver a maximal intent. But you'll have guys either, you know, below 70 or above 90%. On those below 70 days, the receivers and the D-backs would actually run their routes and cover each other at 70% speed. That is much more applicable to preparing their ankles and their legs and their hips for the orthopedic demands of their sport, and also getting in some, you know, GPP work, general physical preparation. That's much more applicable than having guys run through speed ladders and cut off cones all day. And so I think that some of the, I think it's sexy for athletes to see this stuff on social media. And, you know, you see these training facilities in South Florida and Arizona and stuff like that, that have these massive scores of NFL athletes coming through them. And they're just putting these guys through this kind of goofy stuff. And I'm like, does Latavius Murray, you know, I saw him the other day on somebody's Instagram. I'm like, mm-hmm. Does Latavius Murray really need to be tapping his feet in and out of cones and speed ladders all day? You know, I mean, so it's, the guy's healthy. It's just kind of, that's the stuff that kind of, that annoys me. Uh-huh. The gimmicky things. Got because it. sometimes the most simple training is the best, but it doesn't sell and it's not sexy. So, you know, it's much cooler to run in and out of cones than it is to just say, run this route at 70%.
No, I totally agree.
But like Cam Jossie does an awesome job. He's kind of a disciple of like the DeFranco tree, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. And like, I see him doing that with his guys with like, you know, prescribing intensity to what their sport demands are. He's not just changing the entire thing. And I think that's, you know, we need a little more of that simple approach, but again, it just doesn't sell.
Got it. So let's flip that around. So let's say something that like movements or exercises or training that we don't do enough of, we should do more often. Hypothetically speaking, we need more triggered get-ups in our lives.
Yeah. I think I'm a huge proponent of direct core work.
Okay. Meaning?
Meaning, have you done a Awaken Training series?
I have. Yeah. I'm actually doing it now.
So like the stuff that Marcus emphasizes, I think is awesome. Like all of the hollow body holds and the ring planks and, you know, anti-extension, I think is just so important for the back, because as power athletes, we create so much power with our extension based muscles. And we kind of need to reset that throughout the day. And I think the best way to do that is with really good core training and to focus on breathing while you're doing those holds. So I think that's like one huge thing that everybody should do. You know, I've had multiple, I'll go back to NFL guys, but like just cause kind of football strength and conditioning was like my original passion in this field. I've seen these NFL guys that can't hold planks for 25 seconds, like big linemen. And I'm like, yeah, I get you have a little more weight to hold, but you know, some of these guys' cores are weak as a puppy. Like you would be amazed.
Yeah, and it's to your point, it's actually pretty surprising how it can light you up just going from a body weight hollow to adding just very little load to either the feet or overhead. Again, speaking from experience, I might not have the, you know, strongest core either, but you know, adding 10 pounds, you know, to your feet or again, overhead as well in that hollow, and hold that for 30 seconds it's a good time, but it definitely you know, stresses you out.
And if you coordinate breathing with that so that you're not just kind of locking down your ribs and your lungs to get that stability, it can be extremely challenging. And, you know, I just think it's really important for higher level athletes that are putting tons of force to their spines every day.
Got it. And last question in that kind of series, something that most people don't know about that you would recommend they do, and some kind of gems that you've discovered in your career.
So I think the thing, I'm going to go back to pain on this one.
Okay.
And I know that we're talking more performance, but athletes, you know, high level athletes have pain and people that are training just as much as anybody else. And, I think the most important thing, or the thing that people don't understand and we're gaining a greater appreciation for, is the complexity of pain and the fact that it's not as easily solved as, you know, oh, your glute's not firing. Uh-huh. And then within that, you know, there's a lot of, are you familiar with the term like nocebo?
No, I am not.
Okay. So you know what a placebo is?
Yeah.
A placebo is something that, you know, without having an actual physiological effect, it in turn still does through dopamine release in your brain. A nocebo is the opposite of that. So a noxious stimuli is something that causes pain, And a nocebo is just kind of a made up term, what it means is that if I were to tell you, pal, so let's say your back hurt last week when you're in Arizona or mm-hmm. 2 weeks ago, and you come and see me and I'm, you know, orthopedist Teddy, and I x-ray your back and I tell you, oh man, you've got, or MRI. And I'm like, oh, you've got 3 bulging discs and you should never lift again. That could affect you for the rest of your life. And the reality is that if I MRI'd 100 healthy people, 50 of them would have bulging discs in their back with no pain. And so what that tells us is that the reliability of our diagnostics and our understanding of how these pathological findings and these structures in our body contribute to pain, our understanding is vague at best. And so there's a lot of kind of like fear mongering that goes on because it's easy to sell fear and insecurity when it comes to pain. The reality is that most people that are in pain are better off by kind of being reassured that, like, you didn't break your back, pal, like, you'll be okay. You know, get back to movement, go through this stuff. Like, that's what you need. You don't need to be told to sit on the couch. And so that's the stuff, like, that's what really gets me fired up now. Because I see a lot of people that are in pain and they haven't been helped, and they go to these different therapists and chiropractors and doctors, and they're just told everything they can't do and everything that's wrong with them, and that they're, you know, oh, one person told me my glute's not firing, another person told me my back's out of alignment. And you can almost guess who told you what based on what their profession is, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like everybody views their patients through their own biased lens. And that's the stuff that really drives me nuts, man. And it gets me fired up. And, you know, we have an opioid epidemic in our country. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that we don't do a good job of treating pain. And now doctors are just throwing pills at it. And it's like, you know, a lot can be done to kind of build people up. And there's so much of a psychological connection to pain. And that's like a newer focus and passion for me over the past few years.
No, and that's very refreshing to hear. And it's some of the things that we love to do actually is to, we see it as a challenge. If there is, you know, let's say a tweak or some sort of, you know, physical ailment that an athlete comes across, but being able to work around it mm-hmm. and kind of challenging us as coaches and as practitioners or professionals to your point, you know, you can still move. You are still able to perform, you know, not maybe to 100%, but majority of things, again, depending on the individual and the severity of what they're going through, but you can still don't, you know, sacrifice the quality of life necessarily just for this, again, to your point, to this idea of pain and what that might not actually be.
Right.
So that's, you know, thank you for bringing that up. And I think it's actually, I think I might have come across that first and reading Mike Boyle a while ago in terms of the reliability of the diagnostics that we have in the medical profession, which
it's
is
terrible.
Yeah. It's just unfortunate, but, you know, thankfully there's Dr. Teddy and others that are kind of preaching the good fight. I'm going to start winding down because I want to let you go in a few minutes. But we've talked about the website, but what are some other things that are coming up for you?
So I'm just kind of getting this project on the very initial steps, or I'm in the very initial steps right now, but you know, I'm trying to enter into the online training world a little mm-hmm. bit. What I'm going to be putting out is not quite on the same, like, kind of hardcore level of like an awakening training series, but a little more of a corrective rehab and training altogether approach. And so I'm going to be doing some different training programs, you know, like, I want to try to reach some people that maybe wouldn't necessarily be attracted to like a powerlifting program. Like, I want to try to, you know, I was talking to my wife about like what kind of programs her friends would like, uh-huh. stuff like that. So I want to try to branch out that way. And I'm always trying to reach more people, you know, and not ostracize or intimidate or scare people away from the hardcore barbell work. Mm-hmm. So I'm getting into the kind of the writing some programs that I think would be great for the general pop, and that's something that I hope to launch in the next, you know, before summertime. Okay. And then also with my website, and I'm in the process of rolling over more of my content into blog posts and a little bit more explanation on everything. And so let's say I have an Instagram post for Achilles rehab, mm-hmm. and it just kind of quickly at 1.5 times speed flies through 4 different exercises. Instead, what I'll do is I'll have those 4 exercises as each one is a separate video, kind of like your standard video accompanied blog post. I'll have each one as a separate video and describe it a little bit and try to give people a little more insight and background into what I'm actually doing in that rehab and why. So just trying to develop more content and take things to a deeper cerebral level than Instagram can allow.
Got it. Yeah, because it is somewhat limited. Another thing you mentioned earlier is our seminars.
Yeah. So I'm teaching Prehab 101 with Dr. Jacob Harden. Are you familiar with him on Instagram at all?
No, but I will be.
Yeah. So he's great, man. You got to follow him. So Jacob Harden, he's at around 400,000 followers, and for good reason. He puts out a lot of solid info. So he's teaching this course all around the world, and I think he's doing like one a month over the next year. And I'll be up in Toronto in 2 weeks, helping him out, just assistant teaching. And then we're also doing one here in the DC area in September. And so kind of my first opportunity or trying my hand at teaching and getting a little more of that face-to-face interaction as well. And that's what I love to do. You know, when I get patients and people in there that want to work and they want to learn, I mean, I go crazy with teaching them stuff. And so I see myself doing more and more of that in the future.
Any plans on visiting Cleveland?
Hey man, you never know.
Okay.
You know, I spent 5 years of my life in Pittsburgh. And so I have a fond place in my heart for that part of the country. So you never know.
Yeah. Just, you know, I try to be a little selfish on the podcast sometimes. I might as well just kind of get it in.
I'll hit you up, man.
All right, for sure. No, we would love to have you, man, at Black Flag.
You know, it's kind of like we talked about this whole social media thing. I mean, I just started posting like less than a year and a half ago, or about a year and a half ago. And so, you know, I'm 32 years old. I have a long career ahead of me. And I plan on doing a lot of teaching and going to a lot of places. And I just can only do so much at once. You know what I'm saying?
No, totally agree. if people don't know your social handle, what is it?
Strength Coach Therapy.
Okay. And the web.
Yeah. It's all one word. Strength Coach Therapy.
Website is.
It's teddywilsey.com.
Okay.
And then, so that's Teddy, like the bear, TEDDY. And then Willsey, WILLSEY.
And Facebook is Strength Coach Therapy as well, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's Strength Coach Therapy. You can also find me by my name on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. I think all three, you can find me either by my name or by Strength Coach Therapy. Right,
perfect. Yeah. And as always, we will definitely link that up. So if you listeners out there are.
And my YouTube's, I'm getting more and more on my YouTube. I probably have, you know, couple hours of footage on there now too. And that's also Teddy Wilsey.
Perfect. Yeah. Meathead Yoga just came on a couple.
Yeah, man. I've got it. So that Meathead Yoga is for the Awakened Training Series.
Okay. Perfect. Yeah. So
that's the exact kind of stuff that I'm doing for them. And I hope to continue to do that.
Awesome. And Teddy, congrats on all the success.
Thanks so much, man. I appreciate you having me on.
It's been a pleasure. For better or for worse, you're part of the UP Nation now. So any way we can support you, just holler.
Awesome.
All right, Teddy, thank you very much, man.
All right, appreciate it.
Another amazing episode in the books, fam. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. If you are new to the show, don't be afraid to check out other episodes. And if you dig the content, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you ever have any questions, feedback, or you just want to hit us up, please don't hesitate. Email address is contact@unchartedperformance, or you can hit me up directly at powell@unchartedperformance.com, Facebook and Instagram at Uncharted Performance, and if Twitter is your thing, at Reach Uncharted. And give us a follow and tag us to let us know who and where you are. As always, thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and talk to you next week. Cheers, guys.